buscas las ofertas de Early Black Friday en Lowe's, estás justo a tiempo. Ahorra hasta 50% en electrodomésticos selectos y hasta 25% extra en combos de electrodomésticos selectos. ¿Estás pensando ya en poner luces navideñas? Aprovecha ahorros de hasta 50% en escaleras selectas. Precios de Black Friday sin las filas de Black Friday. Lowe's, nosotros ayudamos, tú ahorras. Válido hasta el 11-19, selección varía por tienda, solo en tiendas selectas, hasta agotar existencias. Detalles en Lowe's.com.
If you ask someone to name an icon of modern terror, well, they often skip the literary monsters, don't they? They go straight to the figure in the mask.
That's right.
Today, we are opening the file on one of the most recognizable figures in fictional terror, Michael Myers. But we're not here to talk about sequels or body counts.
No, not at all.
We are tearing apart the foundational source material of the origin story Haddonfield, 1963, to really triff and extract the psychological blueprints.
Exactly. We are specifically moving beyond the mythology, you know, the unstoppable monster trope, mm-hmm. and treating this entire narrative as more of a forensic psychological case study.
Okay.
Our mission really is to understand how profound childhood neglect and radical social exclusion create a specific kind of enduring icon.
Right.
A fixed, silent entity born not of some abstract evil, but, well, of a systemic failure to acknowledge a child.
So think of this deep dive as kind of a map. We are zooming right in on Haddonfield, Illinois, 1963, because our sources tell us that time and that place,
yeah.
that's the exact setting for the transformation.
Mm-hmm. The crucible.
Yeah. We are tracing the shift from a neglected child to the figure of fixation, the symbol of refusal. What are we looking for in the psychological landscape? What shaped this identity?
We are seeking evidence of erasure. That's the key concept.
Mm-hmm.
If you look across the entire Inspector Story Index, this theme of vanishing identity, this idea that the absence of something actually proves a deeper narrative, it's recurrent.
Ah, okay.
We are dealing with an identity that was essentially deleted by its community.
That immediately makes me think of Klaus Richter, Der Schatten, in our index.
Yeah.
For our listeners, that case study focused on the chilling idea that an officially deleted administrative record, like for a soldier, actually becomes the evidence of a deep, hidden systemic truth. But here the deletion is psychological, not bureaucratic.
Precisely. It's the same analytical framework, just applied to a fictional structure.
Yeah.
And we also have the parallel of Real Wendy.
Okay, yeah.
Where records or, you know, external perception, how the community chooses to see you or label you, can freeze in time.
Right.
While the real life, and especially the trauma, it keeps moving. It creates this state of arrested time.
Arrested time.
Yeah, the child in this narrative is operating in that state, trapped by a label, while the world just assumes a simple static identity. The boogeyman.
So the world sees this timeless, abstract, evil boogeyman. But the initial underlying truth, the one hidden in the source material, it's far simpler. And frankly, far more tragic.
Yeah.
The legend begins not with an act of cosmic evil, but with an act of enforced social invisibility. That feels like the critical distinction we need to hold on to here.
Absolutely. That invisible moment, the act of not being seen, that's the starting point. It's where the pressure begins to build.
Okay, so to really appreciate that pressure, the trauma building inside the Myers household, we have to look first at what Haddonfield was projecting externally in 1963. Our sources insist on this contrast.
Yeah, they do.
They paint this incredible, vivid image, a quintessential American small town, mid-century, celebrating its most anticipated annual event.
And Halloween in Haddonfield, it wasn't just described as, you know, a fun holiday. It was more like a communal, binding ritual of belonging.
Like a ritual.
Yeah, an exercise in social conformity, really just beautifully wrapped in autumn colors and candy.
Absolutely. The sources use words like buzzing with Halloween, stores overflowed with masks. This wasn't just commercial stuff. This was collective anticipation.
Mm.
Mothers stitching costumes, kids comparing who they would become. It was the most anticipated night of the year, exactly because it gave every child permission to become someone else.
Yeah, a temporary identity.
Granted by the entire community system.
And that collective external promise, that sense of temporary identity and total communal participation, it created a perfect, almost unbearable mirror for anyone excluded.
Yeah.
When a community projects such immense, vivid joy, this shared sense of self, a license to play, well, the contrast for those inside a hollow home, it's psychologically devastating.
It has to be.
This massive gap between the external ideal and the internal reality, that's the foundation of the narrative tension.
You walk through that buzzing town. Every porch light feels like an invitation. Right. And then you step across the threshold into the Myers household. And that spectacle, that promise, it just vanishes instantly. It's a physical contradiction.
And the sources, they lay out the concrete facts. Profound, pervasive household neglect. We're not talking active, dramatic abuse here.
Yeah.
More like a cold, chronic, passive abandonment. The father drinks. The mother hadn't cooked in days. And crucially, they stressed there was no magic inside those walls.
No magic.
So the external promise of festive belonging collided violently with the internal reality of emotional abandonment.
The source material is remarkably clinical here. It actually states, this is the real Michael Myers, no monster, just a neglected child. When you view the narrative through this sociological lens, it shifts the focus completely, doesn't it? Away from metaphysical evil towards acute sociological breakdown.
Absolutely.
The monster figure, the entity that emerges, it's produced by neglect and social exclusion, not some inherent darkness waiting to burst out.
That gap between the public joy and the private misery isn't just context. It's the fundamental unstable pressure point. That immense painful chasm is the necessary prerequisite for what comes next.
Yay.
The community had basically created this perfect theatrical stage for belonging.
Yeah.
And the Myers home was the empty, dark backstage area.
It's the perfect setting for a child to feel utterly, utterly invalidated.
Definitely.
So given that pressurized internal environment, we now move to the catalyst moment. The moment where the desire for inclusion is tested and ultimately denied. The scene is heartbreakingly simple. Michael sitting on the porch, just silently watching others run past in those bright disguises. It's an unspoken, powerful plea for entry.
He wasn't asking for complex affection or, you know, resources. He was asking for access.
Yeah.
It was a simple, critical request articulated clearly in the sources.
Yeah.
To participate in the communal identity ritual.
He asked for a costume. Just four words. But they carry the entire weight of his desire to access that communal permission, you know, to step into the shared identity of the neighborhood, even just for one night.
It was his last attempt, really, at functional socialization.
And the response, it was the first and maybe the most devastating formal refusal from his environment.
Right. They laughed. They provided mockery, not provision, and told him simply to use whatever he had.
Ugh.
That denial wasn't just rejecting the request for a costume. It was the community's refusal, channeled through his family, to acknowledge or accommodate his deep desire to belong.
Yeah.
This is the moment the narrative pivots, irrevocably, from a hopeful request to a final devastating refusal.
So since that formal request was denied, even ridiculed, he was forced into this radical act of self-creation, using whatever refuse the world had left him.
Exactly.
Which brings us to the creation of the artifact itself, the makeshift costume found in the shed.
And this is where his neglect gets fully materialized into an object. He took the literal components of his abandonment and fashioned his own identity shield.
How so?
Well, he found a broken mask and cut it to fit his face. Then he wrapped himself in torn sheets.
The symbolism there is just incredibly powerful.
Right.
He didn't just get a mask. He found a broken one, which he then had to physically alter to fit his own face.
Precisely. The mask isn't bought. It's fractured. It reflects the broken desire it represents. It's a damaged piece trying to cover a damaged sense of self.
Makes sense.
And the torn sheet, replacing a proper costume, it just reinforces the lack of wholeness, the lack of integrity in his attempted identity. Mm-hmm. It's a symbol of pieced together desperation.
And we have to mention the third object the sources stress, the knife. Found on the kitchen counter, carried with him. The source material is deliberate, calling it a power object, not a tool for instruction or anything like that.
Yeah, and I think we have to be careful not to sensationalize it, but power object in this context refers to its psychological weight. For a child seeking agency where he has absolutely none, a child whose requests are met only with laughter, that knife is a silent assertion of presence. It's a symbol of capability, even if that capability is, you know, undefined at this point.
It represents control.
In a life completely defined by chaos and powerlessness. Exactly.
So the costume he wears isn't some fun disguise. It's a profound, desperate, self-inflicted attempt at creating belonging, crafted entirely from the physical and emotional refuse of his broken world.
Mm-hmm. A desperate measure.
He has the identity shield forged from his pain, and now comes the ultimate test. The social test. He steps out into the street, knowing he's in an unacceptable costume, but desperately wanting just once to belong.
And this is the moment where the external world confirms, validates the internal isolation. He was a strange, silent boy in a crooked mask.
Yeah.
This isn't just a child in a costume. This is a child in an unacceptable costume.
Yeah.
One that signals poverty, brokenness, difference.
Yeah.
It violates the unspoken rules of the night.
And the neighborhood's reaction, it's not indifference, is it? It's cold, decisive, active rejection.
That's the key. No one cheered. Hmm. No one offered candy.
Oh, God.
That small act of refusal denying the traditional token of inclusion, the candy, is an absolutely massive, definitive statement in the mind of a child seeking connection.
Huge.
To the neighbors, he stopped being simply unseen, which was his normal state. He was seen, his pathetic attempt was registered, and he was actively rejected. The sources state, they turned away.
Turned away.
This moves the child past generalized neglect toward a fixed, focused exclusion. And it means the mask failed its primary purpose, yeah, facilitating inclusion.
This is where the analysis has to bring in that cold analytical fact about masks in psychology, in folklore. This isn't just a Halloween prop. It's an archetypal psychological tool.
Precisely. Historically, psychologically, a mask functions as an identity shield. It's designed to perform two contradictory yet simultaneous functions.
Okay, what are they?
First, it allows the wearer to act outside their perceived normal character by removing personal accountability. The face underneath is essentially erased.
Right. Anonymity.
But second, paradoxically, it enforces a new, rigid, and often singular persona. It eliminates complexity. You become the mask.
So if he was seeking acceptance by putting on a persona, the rejection on the street proved that his mask didn't offer him inclusion.
It cemented his otherness.
Wow.
It became a permanent barrier, not a temporary disguise. The community saw the brokenness he was trying to hide, and they refused to allow it to participate.
So the mask failed to be temporary.
And immediately succeeded in providing a permanent one. It became a psychological enclosure. The rejection confirmed that the mask wasn't just an accessory for one night, but a fixed new identity that the community actively refused to accept.
He tried to join the world of someone.
But the world confirmed, with laughter and turned backs, that he was no one. The failure of the community to engage with the child meant they gave him no path back to his own face. They ratified the mask's power to define him.
So the child retreats inside after that definitive public rejection, and this is where we track that intense emotional shift from passive seeking to active resentment.
Mm-hmm.
The external hostility of the street is immediately followed by the intimate, crushing cruelty of the home. He went back to the place where the neglect originated, only to find the hostility has escalated into open, personalized mockery.
He finds no refuge, no sanctuary. Upstairs, his sister, preparing herself for a party, preparing to go join the very community he'd just been so painfully denied access to, she becomes the final vector of humiliation.
She represents everything he desires.
And everything he's not allowed to have. Exactly.
Right.
And she provided the final, fatal catalyst.
The sources paint this specific picture of verbal abuse. She was mocking him, laughing, calling him pathetic. This verbal barrage confirms the utter hostility of his immediate world.
That's brutal.
The outside world rejected his costume, but the inside world rejected him, the small, seeking child behind the crooked mask.
And this moment is absolutely critical for the psychological breakdown. The world had presented him with two unacceptable choices. Be passively neglected and invisible, or be actively mocked and humiliated.
Yeah.
And in that intimate, desperate moment, the identity shield he wore found a new, terrible, offensive function. The armor he put on suddenly had a purpose beyond just hiding.
This brings us to that crucial pivot point, the rapid, silent exchange that happens in the doorway. He lingered there, mask on, knife in hand.
He wanted her to stop.
For a moment, he wanted to be seen.
That fleeting moment in the doorway is the shift. It's the instant where passive neglect gives way to active, desperate fixation. The child's final desire to be acknowledged, to be seen as hurt or frustrated,
yeah,
is met with renewed mockery.
And when that desire is denied,
it morphs into a destructive assertion of presence. The mask is now fully engaged, not as camouflage, but as impenetrable armor. The identity has solidified, and it's become destructive.
That confrontation is silent because the child behind the mask has just run out of words.
Mm-hmm.
The silence is framed by those two opposing forces. The desire for acknowledgement and the final, irrefutable confirmation of his world's endemic cruelty.
The desire to be seen when consistently met with rejection and then active mockery,
mm-hmm,
well, it almost always turns into the desire to make the world stop looking at the child entirely.
How so?
And instead make them only look at the horrifying fixed symbol. The child, Michael, having failed to earn a temporary identity, chooses instead to enforce a permanent one.
And that silent, decisive confrontation dictates the aftermath. The next day, the narrative is tragically simple, complete. The world wakes up to a different reality.
By morning, she is dead. The transformation is complete. The child who wanted to belong is gone.
Gone.
And the final analysis from our source material gives us that necessary psychological conclusion. Michael Myers was not born evil. He was forged by systemic failure.
The narrative pivot has fully transitioned then, from request to refusal, leading to the final fixation where the boy just vanishes. Only the permanent, silent, masked persona remains. The icon is established entirely through an act of self-erasure.
And this vanishing act is precisely where we reconnect to those recurring themes of artifacts and erasure from our deeper source index.
Okay.
The mask, the knife, the costume. These are the only residue of the identity that briefly existed.
It perfectly echoes the conclusion we drew from the Russell Kearney case, the boy behind Buzz Lightyear, where artifacts outlive their makers.
Exactly. Here, the crooked mask is the enduring artifact that outlives the child's identity. The mask becomes more potent, certainly more famous, than the struggling boy who initially crafted it.
And critically, the vanishing act itself becomes the evidence, confirming the Klaus Richter framework.
Like Klaus Richter, erasure becomes the evidence.
Right.
The absence of the child, Michael, proves the existence of the fixed, silent, masked figure, Myers.
Right.
The silence that follows isn't a lack of narrative. It is the physical evidence of deletion.
So the ultimate tragedy, when you look at it through this cold analytical lens, is that the community handed him precisely the symbolic tools of erasure he never took off. They told him to use whatever he had, they denied him inclusion, and he accepted the terms, permanently fixing the disguise to his face.
That's the symbolic conclusion we have to land on. He asked to join the world of someone. The world offered him only rejection and no one. And that term, no one, is what fused the mask to his identity forever.
Okay, so as we step back from the specifics of Haddonfield 1963 and look at the entire arc of this origin story, what's the core analysis we want you, the listener, to take away?
I think it's that the myth of the monster is truly a sophisticated psychological study, a study of neglect and the dangerous power of symbols.
Yeah.
Halloween, a time defined by permission and temporary identity, becomes the setting for permanent fixation. The objects he gathered, the broken mask, the torn sheets, the kitchen knife, they granted a dangerous kind of permission.
Permission for what?
For the rejected child to cease being rejected and become something fixed and terrifying. It demonstrates really powerfully how the systemic breakdown of social and familial structures can lead to the creation of an enduring, destructive icon.
It's a profound analysis of source material that, let's be honest, is often dismissed as just simple entertainment.
Right.
But when you look at it through the lens of exclusion, the story becomes a warning. A warning about what happens when a community fails to provide that basic psychological permission to belong. The boy asked for a costume, a temporary identity.
He asked for a costume. All he got was the mask he never took off.
A perfect encapsulation of the narrative tragedy. And as we leave this deep dive, maybe consider the scene as the town settles. Trick-or-treaters long gone, the lights dimmed on that silent porch where the rejection began.
The frayed sheet hem caught on the porch light, awaiting the morning.